The views expressed on this program are the views of the individual broadcaster and by no means reflect the view of Wesleyan University or the WESU management. Hello, and welcome to Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, a progressive-minded radio show about faith and action, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, and WESUFM.org, providing community radio that matters. I'm Maria Johnson. A shining light in the darkness. The story of a developing friendship between a Christian congregation and that other religion, the one that a certain president finds so scary and dangerous that he wants America to actually close its borders to some of its practitioners. Yes, Muslims. Here in Middletown, Connecticut, Faith Lutheran Church has welcomed with open arms members of a Muslim congregation in need of a place to worship. We'll talk with Reverend Kathy Roars, pastor of Faith Lutheran, and Imam Sami Aziz, who serves Muslims at Wesleyan and Quinnipiac Universities and is the founder of Common Ground Institute and Services, which works to eradicate ignorance about the Muslim faith all over Connecticut. In fact, I'll punctuate this episode with a few clips from Imam Sami's Islam 101 presentation at Faith Lutheran. Reverend Kathy and Imam Sami, thank you for your example. May we watch and learn.
Many dogs and cats spend endless days indoors staring at the wall, living for the moment when you will come home and tell them you love them, take them out, and make a fuss over them. Dogs and cats need physical exercise and mental stimulation, things to do and think about in order to be healthy and happy. Please set time aside for them and give them a real life and real love. For more information, please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals at 757-622-PETA or helpinganimals.com. That's helpinganimals.com.
Love is but a song we sing. Fears we will die. You can make the mountains ring. Oh, make the angels cry. Though the bird is on the wing, and you may not know why. Come on, people now, smile on your brother. Everybody get together.
Myself, I'm a Muslim chaplain at Wesleyan University. I serve as an imam at Bloomfield Muslim Community Center. I'm a graduate of Hartford Seminary. And I started Common Ground approximately 2 years ago. And I don't think I gave the story of why I started it. Did I give that story? So I'll just give it really briefly. 2 years ago, I was serving on the Bloomfield Interfaith Association. And on this interfaith association that I was serving on, there was a Christian leader, among many Christian leaders, who was a very sweet, nice, I think he's liberal, but he was very nice and sweet to me, in particular, always conversing with me, always trying to understand Islam. One day he sent me an email, approximately 2 years ago, asking me about a beheading in Syria. And at that time in my life, I was a student at the Hartford Seminary, and I was of the mindset that I want nothing to do with ISIS. I don't want to talk about it, I don't want to think about it, I don't want to read the news, because it has nothing to do with my life, right? I've never been to that country, I don't speak their language, so it has nothing to do with me. But when he sent me the email, at first I was a little bit insulted, but then as I pondered upon the email, I realized that this sweet Christian man has questions about Islam than probably all of my neighbors do. And most of the knowledge that our neighbors were receiving on my religion were coming from sources that weren't Islamic, weren't Muslim, right? From Fox News, from CNN, from ABC, from NBC. And usually they're either just reporting on a very negative part of my religion, or they're even tainting it with their own lack of knowledge and ignorance and fear. And so I took it upon myself to go out and start teaching people about Islam, ISIS, Islamophobia, Mary and Jesus, the commonalities between Christianity and Islam. I've been to over 100 places all over Connecticut and New England, and I continue to do this work. So I encourage you to check out my website, commongroundservices.org. So if you have questions, you don't feel comfortable asking it here, or you don't get a chance, or you see something in the news in the future and you're wondering about it, feel free to email me. Today's presentation is on Islam 101, the basics of Islam, how we worship, what we believe. It will not go into ISIS. It will not go into Islamophobia. And it won't go into Mary and Jesus too much. But those are presentations we can come back and do, or you can come to one of our presentations, which you'll see on the Facebook page happening all over Connecticut within the next month or two. And it will continue to happen as long as people invite me.
Welcome, Pastor Kathy and Imam Sammy. This feels like a really important conversation we're going to have. It feels like I want to celebrate the idea that you had and what you're doing and what you will do going forward, because this is a quite, to be judicious, I'll say, remarkable time that we're living in. So why don't we start with saying a little bit about your flock? Whom do you serve? We'll start with you, Reverend.
Okay. My flock is at Faith Lutheran Church in Middletown, Connecticut. It's on Washington Street. We're a church that is pretty new. We're in our fourth year. We were two other churches before, two churches in Middletown, and they decided to get together. So the two of those churches dissolved and started. They were St. Paul and Christ Lutheran, and they dissolved and began Faith Lutheran. So that's my flock.
How long have you been the pastor there?
I've been with them since November 2015.
Oh, so not so long.
Not so long, and called full-time in June 2016.
Wonderful.
So I began as their transitional pastor.
So they jointly, in their new incarnation, as it were, hired you.
Called me. We like to say called.
Called. That's much nicer. Yeah. Okay, great. And what about you, Imam Sammy? What's your story?
I serve a few different congregations, mostly because there's not enough imams to go around. So I serve Wesleyan University as their Muslim chaplain 3 days a week during the school year. I serve Quinnipiac University 1 day a week during the school year. I serve part-time for Bloomfield Muslim Community Center in Bloomfield, Connecticut. And my main project is Common Ground Institute and Services, where I go to churches, libraries, schools, universities for the last 2 years and talk about Islam, ISIS, Islamophobia, and other commonalities between Christians and Muslims, like Jesus, Mary, and more.
Was that something of your own creation?
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. I don't know what to say. I feel like I want to devote a whole episode to that. We're going to be seeing you again, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Wow. That's pretty important.
Yes.
So how did you two connect? Anyone?
Well, I have a little background, I guess, if that's all right with you.
Sure.
I'll go first. November 2015, there started to circulate in the political fields talk about Muslims. And the talk scared me, and I couldn't imagine how it felt to be a Muslim, to have people say we're going to deport everyone who's a Muslim in the United States or not admit anyone who is Muslim into the United States. And that made me really angry. And so I wrote in my newsletter that month about it and how that is not what we're called to do. We are called to love one another. We're Christianity is based on loving God and loving our neighbor. And these are our neighbors. And we're to also stand up and stand for those who are marginalized in our society. And so since then, I've been thinking about our Muslim brothers and sisters and wondering how we could help them and how we could let them know that they're not alone, that we stand with them in solidarity. And then maybe you could take our story from there.
I want to interrupt just briefly to ask whether your piece for the newsletter got any reaction.
Oh, it got a strong reaction, a strong positive reaction. I wasn't sure what to expect because I worded it kind of strongly because I was angry. When I told them the approximate population of Muslims in the world and our best guess of how many are in ISIS, it's a tiny, tiny, tiny little piece, you know, 100th of a percentage. And people didn't know that. And I think that
because they get so much press.
Right. Oh, yes. Disproportionately large amount of press. Yeah. Yeah. Right. And I told them the Islamophobia that's growing is evil. That's an evil that's invading our society and it has to be fought. So I wasn't sure the reaction I would get, actually.
You must have been relieved.
I was relieved, yeah. Yeah.
Pick it up, Imam. Sorry.
No problem. So at some point, after I started Wesleyan University.
Which was when?
August I started.
Oh, this past year?
Yeah.
Oh, welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I'm new here. I'm a freshman.
That's cute.
And I actually even gained that poundage, you know, that all the freshmen gain. What do they call
freshman it? Freshman 15.
Freshman 15, yeah. I ate too many pizzas and Cokes and all that stuff, candies.
You look marvelous.
Thank you. Thank you. So once I started Wesleyan University, what happened was a couple of interesting things happened by God's divine will. One is I had a large group of freshman students, Muslim, who are interested in participating in the organization, the Muslim Students Association, and with the Muslim chaplain. And this was a big push that was never there before. And the senior and juniors were like, wow, this is a big group. Even they were surprised. And they kept coming to events. And people kept warning me it's going to die off. But it didn't die off. Mm. It just continued. They continued to want to come to Friday services.
How many people would you get?
I mean, the prayer room can probably fit comfortably 8 people right now, mm-hmm. 8 to 10. We get 15 or more. And I think if we had a bigger prayer room, then we would get 20 to 30 or more.
Wow.
So that's great for Wesleyan,
yeah.
Because it only has about 100 Muslims, probably.
Mm.
So now we're having the problem of finding a bigger prayer space on campus.
What a good problem.
Which is a good problem.
Mm-hmm.
The other issue that came up, I had a meeting with the chaplain at the hospital, Middlesex Hospital, and he told me they have many Muslims there, doctors, nurses, and patients, and they don't have a place to pray for their Friday weekly service because there's no mosque in Middletown or in the surrounding towns. And the prayer services for Muslims are 1 to 1:30, and it's a very short period because people do it on their lunch break.
Yeah.
So if you have to travel from Middletown to the closest mosque in Berlin, that's a 15 to 20 minute drive, and that'll take up your lunch break just traveling there and back.
Yeah.
So then the idea came to my mind is maybe we should have a prayer space for both students and people off campus as well. Additionally, I found out that the Wesleyan Refugee Club on campus was helping out with the refugee family in Middletown. They also need a place to pray. So as this was going on, at some point we had a Jummah on the Green.
What's that?
So Jummah is our prayer service. It's the day Friday, but we call it Jummah as well for the prayer service. In Arabic, it means Friday. And so we did it on the green at Wesleyan in front of everybody, our Friday service.
Oh.
And what ended up happening was we were right there in front of Yuzdan on the green, and I gave a sermon. And a group of Christians and Jews, 60 of them, held their hands around us as a way to show their support and protection of us. During this was after, I think, or either around or after the election.
Mm-hmm.
So this was their way of showing support, and it was beautiful.
So,
it was beautiful.
It was
yeah.
Beautiful.
So around that time, I met one of the community leaders from this area. He told me that they've been looking for a place to pray. So then I said, let me speak to the churches in the area, and I spoke to Pastor Kathy. I went to her church
because it's nearby.
It's nearby. Mm-hmm. I actually emailed her first.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I emailed her and I said, I want to meet with you.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what the response would be. I didn't know if mm-hmm. she would want to meet with me. It said Evangelical Lutheran. So I took mm-hmm. that to mean that maybe they're a little bit more strict.
Mm-hmm.
But then I asked somebody and they said, no, that's a more liberal denomination. You should be fine.
Yep.
And then she responded positively. We met. And then at that meeting, we figured out a couple of things. One is I told her my issue. She said she's open to the idea of having us use her space, but she would need to get approval from the congregation, which she got.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also decided on having future talks mm-hmm. so that her congregation could get educated on Islam.
You're listening to an interview with Lutheran Reverend Kathy Roars and Muslim Imam Sami Aziz, talking about the developing connection between their respective flocks. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from Wesleyan University's Pacifica affiliate, WESU, 88.1 FM Middletown, and WESUFM.org, with the audio posted later at reasonablycatholic.com. Thanks for listening. Back in a moment.
Me, a cat, moving in with a new human. It took a little getting used to. She has these weird games she likes to play, like this giant feather. She sticks it in my face. I swat it away. She sticks it in my face. I swat it away. It's almost like she thinks I enjoy it. But seeing how much fun she gets out of it, well, I guess it makes it all worth it. Humans.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
I'm on your side.
We're all children of Abraham. We worship one God, the creator of the universe. And I really think this is something that God has done, putting us together.
Yes, absolutely.
It really does sound so intuitively sensible that the question arises in my mind, how could anyone object to it? And the only reason I can think of, and enlighten me and us, please, mm-hmm. is it has to do with ISIS. That's the only real fly in the ointment, right?
And I think there's some fear, and whether it's ISIS related or not, and just not understanding. Sometimes people fear what they don't understand.
What are the myths that you're trying to eradicate?
According to Pew Research Center, 62% of Americans have never met a Muslim. And the same research center documents that Muslims are the most disliked group of all the religious groups in America. So I'm just trying to, frankly, just convince Americans, my fellow neighbors, that we're not terrorists. Mm-hmm. We're not going to kill them. We're normal human beings and have good beliefs. Our prophet, Muhammad, peace be upon him, said that Jesus is the closest prophet to him. Additionally, Muslim scholars state that we're the closest to Christianity of all the religions in the world.
In what way?
In every way. I guess the greatest way would be we recognize Jesus. We're the only religion besides Christianity that recognizes Jesus, that he's the Messiah, that he's the prophet of God, that he received a divine message, and that he will return.
Mm. Wow. Yes. That covers more than even some Catholics may believe.
And some other Christians as well.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
Another belief, which many Christians don't know, is that we believe in the virgin birth, the miraculous virgin birth. It's in the Quran, in the chapter entitled Mary. So it's a chapter of the Quran, and the miraculous birth matches the story in Luke in many ways.
What should people know about Muhammad?
They should know he's a prophet, that he received a divine message through Angel Gabriel, the same angel that came to the other prophets, that he brought a message of peace and goodness for the entire world. And we consider him to be a mercy to mankind. But some of the myths you had mentioned, what are some of the myths I'm fighting? You know, the myths are, some people say Muslims worship a moon god.
Where did they come up with that?
I have no idea. But I've heard that from Christian ministers, especially on, usually they don't tell me in my face. I usually talk to them on the internet, Facebook and LinkedIn.
First mistake.
Yeah. This is a Christian minister from the United Kingdom, and he believes this.
I wonder if the Crescent has anything to do with that.
Perhaps it does.
Perhaps. There's a Crescent on the, what shall we say, flag, insignia of the Muslim faith?
On a lot of mosques, there's a Crescent.
Yeah.
We have a lunar calendar, so that's maybe where it came from, but it wasn't traditionally an Islamic symbol. It became so maybe 500 years ago.
All right.
And the Jews use a lunar calendar too.
Correct.
Correct. There's no need to fear.
Yeah. Another myth is that, you know, Muslims are either terrorists or terrorist sympathizers. That's a myth that goes around. And people often ask me, why don't Muslims speak out against terrorism? And the sort of the linkage there is they're not speaking out, so they must sympathize. That's why they're not speaking out. But the honest truth is most of our institutions don't have an imam. Less than 50% have an imam. The imams that are there, they're usually the sole employee. So they're taking care of the divorces, the marriages, the counseling, the services, and they don't have time to go out and teach people about Islam outside of their congregation, which also is going through the same issues of the Catholic Church or other churches, trying to retain their children, trying to take care of their flocks.
Right.
So this is a myth that is ingrained, I think, in American society that I'm fighting against. And I fight that by showing them scholars that are.
Right.
Showing them clips of scholars that are speaking out. Mm-hmm. Show them documents signed by hundreds of Muslim scholars mm-hmm. against mm-hmm. ISIS yeah. and terrorism.
Yeah.
If you watch my ISIS presentation, it's all in there.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Because I was going to ask that myself. Is there enough pushback?
Oh, there's tons of pushback.
Okay.
That's not the issue. The issue is, while a beheading from ISIS gets 3 weeks, a pushback speech by a great scholar will get 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be on the wrong time when you never get to see it.
Wow.
Yeah.
You think that's, I hate to sound conspiratorial, but is that strategic in your view?
Oh, absolutely. For sure. I mean, you're going to, a newspaper is in the business of making money. And what sells is ISIS beheadings.
Mm-hmm.
Peace rarely sells.
Wow.
Right? Also, you know, the industrial military complex, that's also part of it, I think, as well. You need an enemy, you need to dehumanize them, and then you can bomb them and make more weapons to bomb
God.
Them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's horrifying.
It is horrifying.
I
yeah.
want to say, just in defense of the media, because I was a newspaper reporter in a previous incarnation,
yeah.
that I just can't imagine an editor would purposely bury a story about Muslims fighting back against ISIS.
I don't think it's buried. I think it's just not as, you're going to get more viewers for a beheading than you are for a Islamic scholar. And because of that, that's why you keep seeing those images, right? Whenever there's a Muslim attack, they call it a terrorist attack, which is another interesting thing. Terrorists, first thing you think of is Muslim. You don't think Christian, Jew.
Right.
Even though America dropped 26,000 bombs last year, you won't associate those two.
You're talking
ever.
About drone strikes.
Drone strikes and plane strikes in general.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think the media is burying it. I think it's just they put more attention to what people like to view.
Yeah.
But there's a silver lining to the current situation, I would say.
Do tell.
Muslims are...
current situation, are you referring to...
Post-Trump. Post-Trump era.
The election.
Yeah, the election. people of faith are uniting with Muslims. People of faith and consciousness. The Women's March was started by a Muslim girl named Linda Sursour from New York City.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, she's the founder of the Women's March.
Yeah.
And she's been vilified all over because of that, once the right wing found out. And many media outlets came to defend her. And for the first time, I'm seeing images of Muslim women in hijab on CNN's front page in a positive light now because of the pushback.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
And you were on TV at the march in Hartford.
And I was on TV. I was on NBC6.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was your message?
You're
then?
On ABC8 as well.
Was I on ABC as well?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yes.
It was a random interview. I was walking through the Women's March looking for a table, the Peace and Justice Foundation. Couldn't find it, and NBC reporter was there, and she was doing interviews, so I came up and did one, and she just asked me questions about the current climate. Why are you at the Women's March? What do you want to share with the American people? Things of that nature.
Yeah.
It was very touching. It was very, it tugged at my heartstrings. You know, when you said my community is in fear. And I thought, that's not fair. That's not right. That's not the way it should be. And
sure.
Are they in fear not only of discrimination, you know, I hate to say garden variety discrimination, you know, but also deportation?
Yeah. So there's two levels of fear. When people at the top, politicians at the top, start making statements against any group, then there's lone attacks, like what they call lone wolf attacks, by the members of that party or the people who follow them. So we've seen a large increase documented by the FBI and also by Council on American Islamic Relations and other organizations like Southern Poverty Law Center, a huge increase since the election
mm-hmm.
of attacks on mosques and individuals. But then the other greater fear is the institutionalized racism, right?
Yeah.
By laws that are passed against Muslims, banning Muslims from certain countries, right?
The immigration
from those certain countries.
Yeah.
Wow.
That are Muslim, predominantly Muslim. Now, the interesting thing is, he says it's because of terrorism, yet those problems started to exacerbate after we bombed those countries and invaded them and hurt them, right? The other thing, the greatest fear right now for the Muslim community, I would say, is the banning of the Muslim Brotherhood.
Right.
So there's an organization called the Muslim Brotherhood in the Middle East. It's been there since the 1920s or 30s. Kings, dictators don't like that organization because they want to bring democracy to those countries. America has supported a lot of these dictators that the Muslim Brotherhood has operated, those countries that they've operated in. And so America, or some people in America, some politicians, want to make it a terrorist organization. Because once you make a terrorist organization, then you can bomb them.
You dehumanize them.
Yeah. And the fear for the Muslims in America is a lot of these mainstream Muslim organizations in America, like the ACLU for Muslims, like called CARE, Islamic Society of North America, which does large conventions for Muslims since the 50s in America. They will be linked to the Muslim Brotherhood because some of them were started by Muslim Brotherhood members. Or they claim to. These anti-Muslim haters claim that. And even if it's true, to make that guilt by association would be wrong. Also, I would state that Muslim Brotherhood, if some members of their group did commit terrorism, again, it's a very small, insignificant minority, right? We still have the KKK here, even though they're documented to terrorize so many people.
That's a good point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's very true.
Yeah.
So that's a huge fear that all these mainstream moderate organizations will be shut down. Now, if you look at American terrorists, the few terrorists that became in America, they got their Islam on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And now if the government shuts down the mainstream Muslim organizations, which provide good sources of Islamic information for Muslims to be civically engaged, now you're creating another black hole, less resources for people to learn about Islam, even within the faith.
If you are just joining us, this is a chat with two religious leaders who are also friends, Lutheran pastor Kathy Roars and Muslim imam Sami Aziz. The show is punctuated with audio clips from Imam Sami's presentation, Islam 101. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from Wesleyan University's Pacifica affiliate, WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, and WESUFM.org, with the audio posted later at ReasonablyCatholic.com. Thanks for listening. Back in a moment.
Now I've been crying lately, thinking about the world as it is. Why must we go on hating? Why can't we live in bliss? 'Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides a beast train. Oh, beast train, take this country, come take me home again. Oh, beast train, sounding louder.
So the Declaration of Faith, when it is given, if somebody wants to become a Muslim, they have to choose to become a Muslim on their own. They have to study the religion, they have to become serious about it, and often if somebody comes up to me, and I've had it happen a few times, where somebody says, I want to become a Muslim, I'll verify, do you read the Quran? Are you sure you want to pray five times a day? Are you sure you want to fast 30 days in Ramadan? Like, I'll challenge them on those things because they need to be sure about the faith and they need to understand what they're getting into. Additionally, I saw an imam who's much more senior than I am from Egypt give the Declaration of Faith in West Springfield Mosque. And he asked the person converting, does he also recognize Jesus as a prophet and Moses and Abraham and the books?
The few terrorists that have come from America and committed, like the one in Ohio, Pulse nightclub, if you look at their backgrounds, they were psychologically messed up. They were depressed. They had all the same things that the Sandy Hook shooter had right here in Connecticut.
Domestic violence.
Yeah. And then what they end up doing is going on the internet and looking at sources of Islamic knowledge. And a lot of them are negative, or some of them are even by terrorist organizations that want to recruit them or convince them to commit acts of violence. Why they have access to them, I don't understand.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they probably shouldn't have access to these websites or Twitter accounts or
what are you going
to
do?
Yeah. So I don't know if there's talk about shutting those down
okay.
or not.
I thought that's what you were getting at.
I think Imam Sami was saying that the legitimate organizations are being threatened with being shut down.
Yeah.
So if these people wanted to go to a mosque or go to a meeting of one of these organizations and get legitimate information, that way is going to be blocked.
Because they're all tainted by this
Muslim Brotherhood,
yeah.
that Ted Cruz is the sponsor of that bill, he wants to shut down. Now, interesting thing about that bill that came out, the one who formulated that was Michelle Bachmann, who was a congresswoman, who was also anti-Muslim, as well as Ted Cruz. And the person who helped Michelle Bachmann do it was a disgraced FBI agent who was fired from the agency for some issues that he had. So I just think that's interesting, all of those connections. But a lot of Americans don't know this story. So when it comes out, they're just like, oh, Muslims are bad. Let's pass it, you know?
Okay, so you're saying there's kind of nefarious connections behind it all.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I'm curious, when you go around the state and have these events, do you get a good turnout, first of all? And what are some of the questions that people typically have?
I get an amazing turnout at almost every event. There's so much curiosity about Islam and so few people who are willing to go and stand in front of people and tell them why they're not a terrorist, which is a hard thing to do, right? Something nobody should have to do. I should never call you or Pastor Kathy and say, hey, why did those white people in downtown Hartford kill those other white people? Mm-hmm. They were Christian. Did they use the Bible to do that? What's wrong with them? Are they all terrorists? Are they all, you know, there's 16,000 homicides every year in America. There is 40,000 suicide. Once I give my presentation, most people understand. Yeah. But they need to see the facts. Once they see the numbers, the facts of ISIS, the Islamophobia facts, the players behind it. And this is not conspiracy. It's all open information. They have their websites. They openly state it. We hate Muslims, and this is why, and this is all the things we hate about them. Once they know all this stuff and they see it for themselves, they really usually don't have much to say. They're just digesting.
Yeah, I would imagine.
And it's a large meal that they've never tried before.
I've had a lot of interest in the workshop. I call it a workshop. Is that okay to call it that?
Yeah.
Islam 101. There is a thirst for this, a hunger for this meal.
Absolutely.
There is a lot of curiosity.
Yeah.
And to have an imam come and be the one who is speaking, it's an authentic voice.
Absolutely.
And it's an authentic face.
Yeah.
And to be able to ask directly an imam questions rather than ask somebody else who may or may not know firsthand the answer to these things is I really think there's a hunger out there for that,
absolutely,
for the understanding. I call it peace through understanding. I think the more that we learn about our Muslim brothers and sisters, learn that we're worshiping the same God, the God of Abraham, I think that helps the fear be less intense, I guess.
Yeah.
I went to one of these presentations already, and there were lots of questions, but they were just little questions about the way that they practice their faith, about praying five times a day.
Right.
I traveled over to Israel and Jordan, and I remember being in Jordan before all this unrest happened, and hearing from the minarets all over the songs, the call to worship, and it was so beautiful. And to have that five times a day, I loved it because then I would stop and I would pray at the same time.
Oh,
and
that's nice.
I don't do the same pattern they do because I don't really know your pattern that well.
Yeah.
But I pray in my own way. And I thought, how wonderful that all these people are being reminded five times a day to turn back, to reattach to God, to turn back and to remember, you know, whose we are, who we belong to, that God is our God, and that's where our deepest allegiance is to that God.
So. Way back in the old days, but I still remember it, there would be the Angelus. The Catholics would pray the Angelus three times a day.
Ah.
Morning, noon, and evening.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful prayers.
Yeah.
So, forgive my ignorance. I should have maybe done a little research. But you mentioned, both of you, I think, several times, the God of Abraham, this common God. What is the nature of the branching off? What's the story? What happened? We had Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
And then what?
We had Abraham, and Abraham was married to Hagar. And Abraham was also married to Sarah. And
Hagar was the slave woman?
She can be called that, yes.
Okay.
She can also be called Abraham's second wife.
Okay. Was she the one who was set?
Yes.
Like off alone in the wilderness with her child.
Yes.
Yeah, terrible story. Oh, man.
Terrible story of division, but also a wonderful story of redemption.
Talk more.
So Sarah has this child years after Hagar has her child, Ishmael. Sarah has Isaac. Sarah notices that the child is growing up and becomes a little bit jealous. And Hagar is a little bit haughty toward her. And Sarah goes to Abraham and says, "You have to send her away." And I didn't realize until I talked to Imam Sammy, it doesn't say in the Bible that he divorced her. Mm-hmm. It says that she demanded, Sarah demanded, that he send her away, and so he sent her away.
Reluctantly, I feel
reluctantly,
like I remember.
Reluctantly,
yes.
Reluctantly. Put a bag of water on her back and her child and said, you know, God be with you. And she, in the Bible, it says that she went out into the wilderness and walked for a ways until her water ran out. And then out of compassion, I guess you could say, she put her baby underneath a bush, and she said, I can't bear to see him die. I can't bear it. So she went off a ways and then found a spring there, and then was able to rescue Ishmael and then be able to feed him. And then God said, I will bless Ishmael, and I will make his many nations come from him. So that's the version from the Bible. And Imam Sammy has a little bit more from...
Sure. So it's a similar story. She walks with Abraham to the desert. We believe that where they walked to was Mecca, what's known as Mecca today, where the Kaaba is built. And Hagar asks Abraham when he starts walking away. He doesn't say anything. He just starts walking away because he's just so probably distraught to leave his wife and child in the desert. First of all, going back a little bit, before I continue, Hagar, our belief is was that she was a princess owned by a king, the king who tried to seduce Sarah. And the king in our narration was not able to seduce her, because every time he tried to touch her, his hand froze. And he said that you're a sorceress. And he was so scared of her after the third time he tried to do it and his hand froze, that he gave as a gift this princess that he had captured. So we raise her and sort of, so we don't, yeah.
So, you raise her status to that of a princess.
A princess.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah. And so also when the Muslims conquered Egypt, they said that we are related to you because Hagar was from Egypt.
Oh.
So they remember that. The people of Egypt remember that at that time. So there's a historical evidence there. But anyways, so when Abraham goes to leave her in the desert, she walks after him and calls him and said, did you leave me here because God said so? And he said, yes. And then she said, then I'm fine. I'm fine with God. And then she stays in the desert and then feeds the child, drinks the water until she runs out. She doesn't find any water left in her sack. So she starts running from mountain to mountain called Safa and Marwa, the mountain names, seven times, looking for somebody. And today Muslims run those two mountains in commemoration of what she did for Ishmael. And then
saying they populate those mountains?
Correct. Okay. And they walk between them.
Okay.
During the pilgrimage to Mecca.
Ah,
on the Hajj.
Okay.
It's part of what we do, among many other rituals.
Where are these mountains?
In Saudi Arabia.
Wow.
Yes. Near Mecca. And then what happens is she's there and the baby is dying, and Angel Gabriel comes and he kicks the ground and water starts coming out. And that water is called the Well of Zamzam, and it's still there today. So Muslims who go there will drink from it and bring water home.
Oh, it's like holy water.
Holy water, yeah.
Wow.
So the evangelicals and who take the Bible literally will see this as a very negative split, that Ishmaelites are the Muslims and the Arabs, and they're sort of cast out from the family. In the past, John of Damascus called them the Saracens, destitute of Sarah or cast out from Sarah. Mm. And then also there's a verse in the Bible that says that the sons of Ishmael will be wild. So they'll take those verses and then interpret them in our modern context by saying, look, they're wild, they're crazy, they're terrorists. And then they'll also take end of time prophecies and do the same and apply it to the Muslims.
Okay.
But
this is the point at which I should probably say the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America, we call ourselves evangelicals rather than evangelicals to try to show that distinction. Whereas they're a little more conservative, we're a little bit more liberal.
Yes.
And,
wow. Now I would never have known.
Yeah, I know. You look at the word, it looks the same.
Yes.
But
this is very enlightening.
So whenever we hear of Trump's policies, Muslims feel like it's being influenced by the Bible. Because a lot of the people he surrounded himself by.
By the conservative interpretation of the Bible.
Conservative interpretation of the Bible, yes, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah. And because a lot of the people he surrounded himself with make these statements on a regular basis in their sermons to their congregations against Muslims. And then a lot of his advisors are known, like Frank Gaffney, for example, is a known Islamophobe for decades, who've been writing articles and books against Muslims.
What's his role?
He's an advisor.
Oh.
On Muslims for him.
Oh, great.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Really?
So this is why Muslims are worried. Mm-hmm. We have reason to be worried because this guy has been spewing hate for decades. Mm.
This is a visit with two spiritual shepherds showing us how it's done. In Middletown, Connecticut, a Christian community has linked with a Muslim one in the name of peace, love, and understanding. This is WESU 88.1 FM Middletown. Thanks for listening. Back in a moment with more.
Millions of people all over the world go hungry while we waste our land and water resources. Did you know that raising animals for human consumption uses 8 times as much water as growing fruits, vegetables, and grains? And that the same amount of land can produce 17 times more soybean protein than meat protein? If you care about animals, good health, and the earth, please consider becoming a vegetarian. The lives you save may include your own. For free, tasty vegetarian recipes and a DVD, call PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, at 1-888-VEG-FOOD. That's 1-888-VEG-FOOD. Visit online at GoVeg.com. That's GoVeg.com. This message has been sponsored by PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Thank you.
Muslims are on every continent, and the last number that came out was around 1.7 billion Muslims in the world, which is a very large number of people. That is 1/4 of the global population. There's 150,000 Muslims within Connecticut itself. There's also 46 masjids. It's going to be 50 by the end of the year at the minimum, most likely. And then a fun fact, most Muslims, surprise, we're not Arab.
I want to sing You've Got a Friend in Me.
I just want to apologize on behalf of everyone, every sane, thinking, thoughtful, faithful person.
Yes.
But there's not faithful people, everyone, anyone, atheists, everyone would feel your pain.
Yes. There's a silver lining, though. I mean, first of all, one thing that does annoy me, I have to say, Democrat, Republican, all people in America, is the little knowledge they have on how much this is going to affect the Muslim community. Mm-hmm. That's one thing that really bothers me. For example, when I was at the Women's March in Hartford, out of the 10,000 people, I must have saw like 2 or 3 signs that had anything to do with Muslim. Right? Because most of them are on women's rights and other rights. Because Muslims are not at the table speaking. We just came here in the 50s. We're new. We're brand new. And we're having to defend ourselves against a huge onslaught.
Came here in the 50s. Talk about that.
So my understanding is most of the Muslims that came here in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. My family came from overseas, Middle Eastern countries. My family came from India. My uncle's an engineer. He came and worked for Lucent Technologies in the 70s or 80s. And then he brought the rest of the 8 brothers and sisters to America as well.
Where were you born, Imam?
India.
Oh, in India.
Yes.
When did you come here?
I came here when I was 2 years old, so in 1987, into Dallas, Texas, the suburbs.
Oh, man. I can only imagine. What was your education like in terms of your faith? Did you have a Muslim school to attend?
Our Muslim training is on Sundays, like a Sunday school.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty much. That's the training that we received. My father was pretty religious, so he took me to a lot of conventions, conferences. And then later on, I went to a seminary and got more formal training.
So it took. The religion took with you.
It stayed with me because those first 10 years, my dad took me to a lot of celebrity scholars, and I got really
jazzed about it.
Yeah, exactly.
I can see in your eyes.
And it has stuck with me since.
Wow.
It stuck with me since, yeah. And even though I went off into business management for a little bit, I came back and I just said, this is my calling.
It's hard to reject God.
Yes.
Yeah. He doesn't let up.
Nope.
That's what I understand.
Absolutely.
I've never been troubled with the call, but what I understand is when you hear it, boy,
yeah,
that's it. Yeah.
Yes.
You're done.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, man. Was there anything that you wish that we had talked about that we can explore a bit? How do you see your connection evolving? I know it is. It depends on the congregation agreeing and your sense of the students and others wanting to kind of become part of the Lutheran church facility.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But
we host 2 Pentecostal churches that are growing, that are starting, fledgling communities, I guess you could say.
Really?
So, mm-hmm.
Now talk about that. What do you mean by Pentecostal?
Do you remember the Holy Spirit descended on Pentecost filled the 12 disciples with the ability to speak in tongues?
Yes.
So that's one of the things that they highly value, is the ability to speak in tongues.
Wow.
One church is Spanish speaking, so they are reaching out to the Spanish population in Middletown, which is something that we, don't really have the people to do, the language skills to be able to do that. So that one's interesting. Yep.
So as far as our relationship to your question, I think we're going to continue to develop it. Her church is the closest to Wesleyan University, and we're going to see where it takes us and where it goes. One project that I have that I haven't told her yet, and I don't know if she'll want to do it. I think in general, I think some people in Middletown might be interested. There's a sanctuary movement going on, and it's increasing.
Mm-hmm.
Where cities and university campuses are declaring them some sanctuary.
New Haven, for example,
Wesleyan University, mm-hmm. Bridgeport, Hartford.
They're about to be punished by the Trump administration.
Well, that's one issue. Yes, that is an issue.
I've heard that too.
But the issue that I want to bring up, because Muslims are not at the table speaking, they're not being considered in the language of sanctuary movements at all. So while they'll protect other minorities, there's no protection for Muslims.
Ah.
And one of the greatest fears for the Muslim community is that the cabinet position appointments will trickle down to the local police stations. So when the head of the FBI says Muslims are bad, and they start training Muslims on that, training police stations on that perception, it'll start trickling down. But a police station can reject federal level trainings. They can reject federal level to some extent. And we want to be there to have the mayor of all of the towns in Connecticut make public statement, including Middletown, that Muslims are welcomed here. They're protected. Just like we're not going to arrest undocumented immigrants, illegal immigrants, we're not going to just go and arrest Muslims just randomly or give out files or give out information randomly. So I'm working on that in the town of Windsor. I've already had one meeting with the mayor. And the document's already made up with some Muslim lawyers. And it's going to be proposed in Bloomfield probably pretty soon, too. And we're hoping to bring that to Middletown. And we're not calling it sanctuary because we know of the negative terminology, how it's going to be used against cities. We're just calling it maybe safe ordinance or safe space ordinance. We're going to use a different name.
That just is beyond comprehension. I mean, okay, an undocumented person, it can be argued that they broke a law, but to deport someone or threaten them at all with anything because of their religion, it is the definition of anti-American.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. 100%.
I barely recognize these people.
Yeah. One of the appointees of Trump, I believe it was somebody who's considering for Homeland Security, stated that they were disappointed in Obama and Bush because they believed that Islam was a peaceful religion.
Because Obama and Bush believed that Islam was a peaceful religion.
They stated that openly. And they're going to be the head of Homeland Security and train thousands of Border Patrol agents and TSA agents.
Oh, my gosh. So here you are. You're wearing, tell me what this is called.
Kufi. It's called a kufi.
A kufi on your head.
Yes.
And say you want to travel somewhere and go to Bradley Airport. Do you feel some trepidation?
Absolutely. 100% every time I go to the airport.
Oh, without, my goodness.
Without a doubt. Yeah.
Call me. I'll go with you.
Well,
I mean, this is why I have a safety pin on, and I try to have a safety pin on whenever I go, so that people like Muslims, LGBTQ community, will know that there's someone that's safe.
Yes.
So if they need to sit somewhere on a train, they can sit near somebody that's wearing a safety pin.
Yeah. Thank you.
That just breaks my heart.
Yeah.
And it makes me a little bit angry too.
Honestly.
You shouldn't have to be worried about that.
My wife and I went.
Does your wife wear a headscarf?
She does. When we went to Chicago, they gave her extra check, and they even put a cotton swab in her mouth.
What?
Which I've never heard them doing ever.
That feels like a violation.
It's ridiculous. It's out of control, in my opinion.
Why were they doing that?
I have no
idea. They didn't explain?
No, they didn't explain anything. And you don't want to cause any problems.
You're in a vulnerable position.
Yeah.
You don't want to ask a lot of questions.
You need to get to your gate
right. As
soon as possible.
Right.
That's a new one on me.
Yeah. It was new for me, too. I was like, what? Why would they do that? I have no idea. So, you know, Islamophobia at the end of the day hurts Americans the most. Mm. It will hurt America the most. Trillions of dollars that should be spent on healthcare, social security, infrastructure, education will now be spent on militarizing our nation and bombing other nations out of this fear of Muslims. And it's been going on for over a decade. NPR had a piece on this, and it will continue until we break that fear and ignorance.
You just opened my eyes to something I hadn't even thought about, and that I'm sitting here trying to integrate that information.
The two of us,
that's
we're
a
just
shock.
Shaking our heads.
Yes, yes. Aren't we supposed to be in the home of the free?
Well, I want to thank you both.
Thank you
for coming, and I just am rooting for you.
Thank you.
And anything I can do by way of my little program, or anyway. I want to.
Thank you.
We like to call it in the ELCA, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, we like to call it God's work, our hands.
Beautiful. Right. God has no hands but ours.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
We are God's instruments.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you
for having us.
God bless you.
God bless you.
That was a visit with Lutheran Reverend Kathy Roars, pastor of Faith Lutheran Church in Middletown, and her friend Imam Sami Aziz, who shepherds Muslim students just across the street at Wesleyan University and also at Quinnipiac University. Imam Sami has made it a mission through the organization he founded, Common Ground Institute and Services, to shed light on his misunderstood religion. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from Wesleyan University's Pacifica affiliate, WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, and WESUFM.org, with the audio posted later at reasonablycatholic.com. Be sure to tune in 2 weeks. I'm Maria Johnson. Thanks for listening. Now stay tuned for The Jive at 5 and Acoustic Blender with Bill Revel.